This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world, because that's what you crave, the latest automotive information. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague, back from not being with us last week. We're glad you're back, Chris.
Me? I am as well. Back from the, not from the dead quite, but...
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, that would be quite a story. I mean, we should do a special on that if you're back from the dead. There's a lot of things you could tell us, but I'm glad you're back and have some stuff to talk about. Our special guest this week is Ian Grace. He is a really interesting guy. He works for a car dealer services company called Automotive Mastermind. Sounds, you know, interesting, doesn't it? Its title. We're going to be talking about some new techniques, electronic techniques that dealers use to make better connection with their customers or hope to customers. It's kind of behind the scenes stuff at auto dealers, and I think you'll find it fascinating. I certainly did. And in the car review segment, we're going to be taking long looks at the Ram 1500 Laramie 4x4. That is a vehicle in which my wife and I traveled up about 4 hours from here to drop our youngest child off at college, move her in, get all that done. So we decided the Ram 1500 was the vehicle for that. And Chris, what were you driving this past week?
I was driving the Mazda CX-30, which is probably not the perfect vehicle to move a child in, or a son or daughter into college, but a fun little vehicle nonetheless.
Right. Yeah, certainly not my daughter. You know, I don't think maybe one of her items might have fit in a CX-30. Filled that pickup truck up, let me tell you. Before we do any of that, though, number one, I should be welcoming Chris back. Chris, of course, is Maine-based. I am based in Southern California. And you might give us a quick rundown on what's going on in Maine these days.
What's going on in Maine these days? Well, surprisingly, or maybe not, it's a little bit hazy here, actually. So we're seeing just now seeing the remnants or the waft over of the major fires that are going on some 3,000 miles away from here. So the past couple of days have been quite hazy. Other than that, we're edging into fall. The leaves are starting to change. So hopefully we can get away with a season without many, many, many New Yorkers and New Jerseyers here for a season so that I could actually go see the leaves. But I doubt that'll happen.
Yeah, so. I mean, it is so gorgeous up there. And I've spent a couple falls, at least fall days, not entire falls, in Maine, and it's just spectacular. So, I shouldn't be promoting that, I guess, if you wanted to keep the leaves to yourself, Chris, but it's a pretty cool place to go.
I agree. People still come, so it's a lot of fun either way, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to dissuade them on this show. Before we do any of that, and before we do the road testing, before we have the interview, of course, we talk about the latest in automotive news. And what do you got for us this week, Chris?
Well, something I'm actually pretty excited about is the new Nissan Z Proto. So this is the long-awaited successor to the 370Z, the next car in that line. I think it's been several decades now that it's been around, but they announced it, was it yesterday or the day before? And it looks pretty exciting, Jack. It's very retro inspired. So they're taking cues from the very first generation Z car, and even before that, one of the Z cars that was a Japan only that we didn't get here in the United States. But it's got a nice curvy shape. It'll have a twin turbo V6, six-speed manual transmission. The interior looks very modern, very, very great. The outside, I think, looks wonderful as well, although I have mixed opinions about the grille. I've heard some of my colleagues that like the square look set against the curves of the car. But what do you think?
I'm kind of on the fence on it. I'm not certain that it's one of those things that I think maybe I will grow to like, as opposed to immediately looking at it and going, yeah, okay, that works. I don't know.
I think if anything else, for me, it'll be a good competition for the Supra, and maybe we'll push Toyota to do some interesting things with that car as well. So looking forward to seeing that. Probably will be 2021 sometime. We don't have any specifics on it, but it's likely to be called the 400Z when it does arrive.
Yes. Well, and I'll tell you, Nissan is on a product roll. They're turning over virtually all of their product line over the course of the next 18 months or so. So that certainly is one of them. It's a legendary car, at least it's a legendary designation And we'll see how legendary this generation of it becomes.
So absolutely.
That'll be interesting. Well, one of the things I did recently was listen to a very lengthy Ford presentation. It was actually embargoed, but I can talk about it now because the embargo has lifted, about how important Ford Motor Company is to the country and how important the country is to Ford Motor Company. It was kind of amazing stuff. In fact, more information I will deliver, I guess, in next week's show. But one of the things off the top I want to talk about is the F-150, the pickup truck, and how important that is to Ford Motor Company. And beyond which, they're in the launch of the 2021 version as we speak. You've probably seen ads on TV. If you've been watching any TV, it's a pretty big blitz about Ford Motor Company and building for America and being about America. And the next thing they're going to announce, or one of the next things, is an electric version, an all-electric version of the F-150. And, you know, there's a bunch of startups out there that are working on electric pickup trucks. And Ford Motor Company, the franchise really is the F-Series, or certainly one of them, and the major one. And so they're not going to let that go. So they have been working very, very diligently on their own all-electric F-150, and it'll be pretty cool. It'll feature dual electric motors, delivering more horsepower and torque than any F-150 available today. So think of that. Think of the acceleration that can bring, especially when you have all that torque at zero RPM. And it'll be a tow vehicle. They're not giving that up. They certainly want to do that. They claim, and probably very rightly so, that an electric F-150 will require less maintenance than a typical gasoline-powered pickup truck. I've got to believe that's true. They suggest it would have more than a 40%, they being Ford Motor Company, a more than 40% savings in lifetime total cost of operation. So think of all the fleet operators that are operating pickup trucks now and what they might be able to save with a new electric pickup truck. So, my sense of it is the new electric F-150 will do pretty much everything the current gasoline-powered and diesel-powered F-150s will do, but maybe do them better and do them quicker and less expensively. So that's pretty amazing all the way around.
I agree. You know, if you think about the powertrain of an internal combustion engine, you know, all the moving parts that have to go into that to moving a truck down the road, and even more so when it's pulling a trailer or a load. But when you get rid of that and you put a motor in each wheel, you kind of, there's a lot less that can go wrong along the way. So
right,
be exciting to see what they end up with. Now, since I didn't see this presentation, which is odd for me being the Ford Authority guy, but since I didn't see it, I do have to ask, did they talk any about the partnership or their investment in Rivian and how that has impacted their path forward?
They really did not. It was kind of Ford Motor Company all the time. Maybe that has informed what they're doing, but they did not speak about that. I think one interesting thing, and you point that out a little bit or kind of allude to it, is what is now the hood of the vehicle and the engine compartment would be a second trunk. Essentially, or a big portion of it would be a second trunk in the new electric F-150. So think of the added cargo carrying versatility that would offer, and at the same time, a lockable storage that the typical pickup truck doesn't necessarily have. So that alone would be pretty interesting, I think.
I will take that. Hauling groceries in the bed of a pickup truck is no fun.
It really is not. So, well, that's it for the news, and pretty interesting news, we think, going on this week. I think the auto industry is really coming alive as we're coming out, we hope, the other end of this COVID pandemic. I think we're going to see some really fascinating stuff in the final quarter of this year and then on into 2021. So look for that and listen for this. In the next segment, which is our car review segment, we're going to be talking about the Ram 1500, a competitor of the Ford F-150, and the Mazda CX-30, a small sport utility from Mazda. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you on America on the Road, and we're so glad you're with us. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad back with you, and we thank you so much for being with us. It's road test time, one of our favorite portions of the program because we love talking about cars, and we have some interesting vehicles, not necessarily cars, to talk about this time around. Chris, you were driving the Mazda CX-30. It's one of its smallest SUVs. Tell us about it.
I was. I also believe it's one of their newest, debuted very recently.
True. But,
so I tested the 2020 Mazda CX-30. This was the premium package version. Starts around $28,000. I think my test unit came out to be around $31,000, $32,000 with all things considered. It's powered by a 2.4-liter four-cylinder engine, 186 horsepower, 186 pound-feet of torque. Through a six-speed transmission. Mine had all-wheel drive, although they do come, I believe, standard with front-wheel drive. And true to form with Mazda, you know, Jack, we were talking about this just a few weeks ago, driving dynamics and style and then interior quality. So the CX-30 is a small crossover. It performs every bit as much as it were to be a hot hatchback. That sentence didn't really make sense. So it performs like a hot hatchback. It's very zippy. It's very handles very well. It doesn't feel like a crossover at all. I think that's due in part to Mazda's tuning, but also in part because it's a small, very small crossover.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even really look like a small crossover, no. Does it? Yeah, it's not really very tall. Yeah.
And from the inside, you know, I'm definitely not in the target market for this vehicle. Two children, my family of four, we maxed out the vehicle before we even put anything else in there. So we talked about hauling groceries in the front trunk of an electric F-150. A grocery store run for a family of four maxes out the CX-30 and then some. So we were loading groceries into the floors in the back seat and all that. So parents with full-size car seats or rear-facing car seats will find a tough time balancing front leg room and rear seat room, so allowing enough room for the seat to be latched in place without bumping into the front seat. But kids in booster seats should be fine. That said, the front seats are extremely comfortable. The premium package model that I tested came with a really almost cocoa or mocha brown interior. It almost looks black until you look at it very closely. Had the navigation with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Mazda's excellent head-up display, a leather-wrapped steering wheel and shift knob, and all the bells and whistles from a safety standpoint. So blind spot monitors, rear cross traffic alert, forward collision warnings, and so on. And many of those are standard, even at the base model, which is, I believe, below $23,000. So that's quite a deal. And as I mentioned before, Mazda has put all of their fun to drive dynamics and all the style in there that is possible. I stopped at the bank, and one of the tellers in the drive-through window spent 10 minutes telling me how beautiful the car was. So it's a looker, it's a driver, but if you have more than two or three people to haul on a regular basis, especially kids in car seats, you might want to take a step up to a CX-5 or so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Spot on. It's a fun vehicle to drive, absolutely. Whether it really scores as a crossover SUV or not, kind of questionable in terms of the utility, just because of its size. I mean, everything about it is enjoyable, but there's only so much stuff you can put in it, and I think a lot of people who are buying that type of vehicle want that utility. So, I mean, that's the only knock I have at all on the CX-30 for Mazda. I think it's a great vehicle otherwise.
I agree, especially since the Mazda 3 now has all-wheel drive and a hatchback as well, so it's getting very good on its own. And probably, I don't know the exact numbers, probably offers the same or close to the same amount of space in the back. So either way, it's very fun to drive, great vehicle.
Right. Well, talking about great vehicles, when the Nerad family was trying to sort out what vehicle we should ask for to borrow to take my youngest daughter to college, we actually didn't have to think very long because we had been very impressed with the Ram 1500 pickup truck in an earlier trip that we had taken in one, and just because of the comfort and the interior comfort of front seat and rear seat, we just thought this would be terrific. I didn't realize we would essentially max out its payload as we were putting my daughter's stuff together to take up to her dormitory room up at the college. But we did. We managed to fill up a half-ton pickup truck pretty much to the gills, including using the special kind of saddlebags they have over the rear wheels, which became kind of necessary to use just from the amount of stuff. It's not like this vehicle can't haul, because it really can. It has, among other things, a towing capability of 12,560 pounds. So, you know, not a lightweight, that's for certain. But we were able to max it out. We happened to borrow one with the diesel engine, which has 480 pound-feet of torque, and just turned out to be absolutely terrific for what we're going to do. The range on the vehicle when filled with diesel, and it takes something like 25 gallons of diesel to fill it, is around 800 miles. So think of that, 800 miles without filling the tank with gas. Our vehicle was equipped with air suspension, which made it extremely comfortable. In fact, I think one website has named the Ram 1500 the luxury car of the year. Maybe rightly so. I mean, especially with the air suspension, it's just a terrific vehicle in terms of comfort, interior comfort and quiet. The interior of our vehicle had the Uconnect 4C with the 12-inch touchscreen. So a touchscreen as big as all outdoors. We were showing movies on there and inviting the whole neighborhood in to watch them. Well, not quite true, but almost. And as I say, a big, spacious cab. My wife enjoyed her space. My daughter enjoyed her space, although about two-thirds of the rear seat was taken up with her stuff. This with a full pickup truck bed also filled with her stuff. So I guess I better put my request in for another pickup truck to take her back, you know, when she comes home. But just an all-around delightful vehicle, I think, in terms of comfort. It's certainly not extremely agile, but maybe more agile than you would think. And a good-looking vehicle. The vehicle we had was in Laramie trim, and it was a 4x4. We never needed the four-wheel drive opportunity, but I think it had 22-inch wheels and requisite tires. Kind of monochromatic, maybe duochromatic, I think would more accurately describe it. It was silver and black. But just all around, liked it a lot.
I agree. It's hard to imagine a better place to be in a pickup truck than the Ram. The interior is spectacular. You mentioned that the infotainment system, the technology is cohesive. It's intuitive. It works very well. The screen, of course, you can see from across the street. And the ride is really good for a pickup truck. You know, I don't think I've found a better one in a full-size truck. So I agree, all around, a great, great pickup.
Yeah, yeah, we really enjoyed it a lot. I mean, it will even, with the air suspension, it will even lower itself to enable you to get in a little easier. So that is nice. And with the fold-out steps, I mean, getting in and getting out was just a breeze. And unloading was a breeze. It had a dual-action tailgate that secured our cargo and was easy to use both ways, because dual action means two ways, I think. And it all went well.
Great.
So we've got a couple of great vehicles, the Mazda CX-30, and which could probably fit in the bed of the Ram 1500 Laramie. But two great vehicles this week.
Absolutely.
So when we come back, we will be taking and answering, not just taking, but answering listener questions. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you. And we will be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you. And we're so glad you're with us. We really do appreciate it. And now is the time in the program where we answer listener questions. So if you have a listener question, shoot it our way. Maybe not with a shotgun, maybe a bow and arrow or something like that, something a little more benign. Or you could email us at editor@drivingtoday.com. Here is a question that came in recently from a listener. Should I get a vehicle history report on a used car? Presumably this listener is going to buy a used car. What's your take on that?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is that it should only be one tool in your sort of toolbox to assess the quality or the background of the car you're about to buy. I can name at least a few circumstances or a few times that I've reviewed a vehicle history report to find that it says the color of the vehicle is different than the vehicle that you're looking at, and various other issues where it has said that there was one, a story I actually wrote last year on a car that had been reported as being in a wreck every 6 days for the entirety of its 8 years of life. And, you know, you can imagine how that's kind of a ridiculous scenario. Chasing the story down, I called Carfax and spoke with their media representative. And it turns out, yes, that is an error, and it does happen quite frequently. So it should be one tool in your toolbox. But the absolute best thing I think that anybody can do is to take the vehicle to a reputable mechanic that you trust, that is independent of the person or the car lot that you're buying the vehicle from, and have them give it a good look over. They should be able to tell if it's had shoddy collision repair, if it's, you know, mechanical issues that are going to crop up. But the Carfax is good, or the vehicle history report is good to get that sort of information. But again, it should just be one sort of tool in your arsenal when you're assessing that vehicle.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, there are a couple of sources for vehicle history reports. Probably the biggest one, the most well-known, is Carfax that you talked about. There is also AutoCheck, which is done by one of the credit reporting bureaus, Experian, and they do a very good job. They're also not cheap, although when you're buying a multi-thousand-dollar used car, spending $30, $40, even $50 on a vehicle history report probably makes sense. But as you say, that's not the only thing you need to do. And while they will catch a lot of potential problems and point out some potential pitfalls, they won't catch all of them necessarily. So having a reputable technician go over the car is indispensable. And I've been saying that on the radio for 20 years or so, maybe longer. I wonder how many people actually take my advice. I'm inclined to believe not that many, but it's certainly something that you should do.
I agree. And just one more thing, you know, having just sold a used car myself, I used Craigslist to do this. I didn't do Auto Trader or anything fancy. In the past, you would see scams. So if anyone's getting ready to sell a vehicle and you have the vehicle history report, the new scam that I found out, and this is really clever, is that someone will reach out and pretend that they want to see your car, or a bot or a computer will reach out and pretend they want to see your car, and they'll ask you, do you have a vehicle history report? And if you, you know, depending on how you respond, they'll say, hey, I have, why don't you go check out this website? So it was, you know, I'm not going to make up a name because it could actually be a real site, but to, you know, vehiclehistoryabcxyz.com. And I think that's their scam to get people to go and pay them or pay their site for a history report. But, you know, by and large, I think the big names, Carfax and some of the ones you mentioned, are the best way to go.
Right. And very often, if you're buying from a dealer, the dealer subscribes to Carfax or subscribes to AutoCheck and will provide you with a vehicle history report just as part of the whole program. I recently bought a vehicle from Budget Rent-A-Car, and one of the pieces in my packet was a vehicle history report. So that gives the consumer a better feeling about making that purchase, and getting it for free makes it even better.
Sounds great. Yes, yeah. I agree.
So that's our listener question for this week. When we come back, we will be talking with Ian Grace. He is with a company called Automotive Mastermind, and we'll be going behind the scenes with dealers to see how they reach out to you. Actually, I think provide you with some pretty good service. It all depends on how you look at it, but we'll talk to Ian Grace about that from Automotive Mastermind when we come back. So with Chris Teague, this is Jack Nieradden. Thanks for being with us. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad back with you. Interview time, and I think it's going to be a really interesting interview today. We have Ian Grace with us. He is the Senior Manager of Partner Performance at a company called Automotive Mastermind. And Ian, thanks for being with us, number one. Tell us a bit about Automotive Mastermind, would you?
Yeah, happy to, Jack. So thank you for having me. Automotive Mastermind, at our core, we are a behavior prediction and technology marketing company. Basically, what we do is work with automotive dealers and help them to identify, communicate with, and sell to their customers. So it's really kind of a three-pronged approach, working with the customers that are theirs, those loyalty retention customers, customers that are service not sold, so servicing with the dealer and originate with them, and then obviously the conquest customers that are within their AOI, but, you know, maybe driving something that's not, you know, being sold by that.
Right. So how does that manifest itself? Obviously, it's invisible to the consumer, but there are ways that, you know, what you do helps dealers reach consumers and reach people who are probably pretty destined to buy in the near future. Talk a bit about how that all works.
So, yeah, so that's where the behavior prediction kind of analytics and our, you know, integration with IHS market data comes into play. So in September of 2017, Automotive Mastermind was, you know, purchased by IHS Market, who also owns Polk and Carfax, right? So we're now basically in a way where prior to September of 2017, we were a vendor of IHS Market, which is a world leader in analytic data on consumers and in the world of automotive space. It's an industry leader, typically where a lot of the manufacturers are going to for their industrial data. So basically, we went from being a vendor to being integrated within the IHS family. And by default, you know, kind of went from being, I like to think of, plugged into the wall to being plugged into directly into the nuclear reactor for that power and that data. So our IHS market data is looking at not just, you know, the individual households in data, demographic data, but also external things outside of the household around that individual customer. So when you combine the DMS data, you know, that we have from the dealer on their customers with that IHS market data, we've got over 1,000 points of data on these customers. And that allows us to kind of understand better, you know, who's going to buy and more importantly, why they're going to buy, so that then we can empower the dealer with that information to make a proactive phone call to the customer or outreach. And obviously also to market to them, but market to them in a very micro-targeted way. So, you know, instead of sending the large key that says, come into Grace Toyota for Corollathon, even though I'm driving a RAV4, you know, this is very specific to the customer, speaking to them on their needs and how they use their vehicle. So it's a really insightful, intuitive technology that really helps drive a micro-targeted nature to what we're doing, and therefore obviously gets us better conversion rates from a marketing perspective.
Right. By micro-targeted, I think you mean relevancy has got to be very important, right? So, you know, I always say that a message that is not relevant is just garbage. You know, it doesn't mean anything to you. It's spam. But a message that is relevant is great information. And I think that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to avoid spamming customers. What you're helping your dealer clients do is deliver targeted messages that can be useful information and help a person make a good buying decision about a vehicle that they want.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is, too, is that there's so much to that relevancy that we try to drive to with the micro-targeted nature. So when you consider things like, you know, for example, using a lease customer, you know, if Jack is one of our lease customers, he may, in the back of his mind from 2.5 years ago, think, oh, I've got 15,000 miles available on this lease. But meanwhile, he was actually contracted for 12,000, right? So what we're going to pick up in Automotive Mastermind based upon service records is, you know, we're going to see that Jack is actually trending to be at around, you know, 15,500, which would not be that big of a deal if he was driving 15,500 miles a year on average if he's on a 15,000 mile a year lease. But if he's on a 12,000 mile a year lease and still has 6 months left, you know, now we're going to be able to reach out to that customer and really from it's a service, you know, even more than it's a sales conversation, it's a service conversation. It's letting Jack know, Jack, you're treading on some thin ice here. If you continue to drive the way that you're driving, you're going to be over your lease mileage, and it will cost you $2,300 when you turn your lease in. And Jack may say, I didn't even realize. I thought I was on a 15. Thank you so much for calling me. So it's as much about, you know, helping the customers as it is, you know, with that relevancy and micro-targeted as well.
Right. Talk with us a little bit about, you know, how you work with dealers to make this happen.
Yeah, so that's a big part of what we do. I think, you know, Automotive Mastermind is really what separates us from our competition is our service. and our commitment to that service. So what we're doing is obviously offering, you know, those predictive analytics, but it's and the marketing, et cetera. But it's really, we consider ourselves a partner and not a vendor. So what, we take that very seriously. We're in our partner, you know, our partner dealer stores, you know, between every 30 to 45 days, we are working with the sales floor to optimally, you know, to optimize their usage of the technology and understanding of the technology. We're working with the sales managers and general sales management, you know, to make sure that trade books and, you know, their model mapping is all in tuned to make sure that the technology is going to get them the best results. I mean, now is a great example with the instability of inventory, right? So what can we do to help our dealers in a time where inventory is lean? Well, we can talk through them to them about maybe working through and saying, well, you're out of RAV4s, but a Highlander LE may make sense for that customer that's driving a RAV4 based on programs. So we really consider ourselves sort of the sixth man on their bench of a basketball team, you know, and it's not a vendor partnership. It's really, we're in there monthly with an invested roll up the sleeve sort of mentality to help them really drive the best results.
I think a lot of consumers have a picture of dealers as not being very progressive retailers. And maybe some of that is justified. But it strikes me that what you're doing with dealers is very progressive and is also very consumer service oriented. You know, what's your take on that?
I would completely agree with that take, Jack. I think, you know, when you think about what we are, and just even at our core, right, just those words, behavior prediction technology, right, they can give some people the willies, right, if you're sort of, you know, not a progressive person. But I think when you think about that stuff, it's very future, it's very data, it's very cutting edge, right? So by that, you know, kind of default, you know, much of our partners, even the most conservative, have to have a level of progressive approach to how they look at their business. So, you know, I think that, you know, we have many that are bleeding edge type of partners that they're using, you know, digital facial recognition in their service departments for their customers. You know, there's that level of it. And then there's even, you know, the guys that are just taking their first steps out of the dark ages when they come to Mastermind. But even it's still on either end of that spectrum, there's always a level of progressive thinking and philosophy that they're bringing to the table.
Do you do something special or do you change the approach for dealers who transact online or can transact end-to-end online, or do you largely do the same kind of services for those folks?
Well, I think it becomes a little bit more of a bespoke approach when we're servicing them. So generally speaking, you know, pre-COVID, you know, most dealers, obviously, you know, new car dealers, are operating in the brick and mortar sort of mindset, right? There may have been some that were a little bit more bleeding edge on doing some of the end to end, but obviously during COVID, that's really what forced all dealers virtually to a more digital end to end model. So in that time is where we have kind of evolved with them, right? So I would say prior to March, you know, it wasn't as much of a factor. Now, it's something we're focusing on at a dealer by dealer level. There are some that are doing it more than others. So with some, we're helping with their, you know, as a dealer relations manager, you know, you might be giving insights onto how to, you know, reformat your the website, or, you know, what can we do to align your website with the marketing? What are best ways, you know, during COVID, when things were more, you know, shelter in place in many states, what we were doing was running, you know, kind of articles and be trying to be thought leaders, but also running webinars both to our internal partners as well as non-partners externally, you know, on how to market and speak to and sell the customers in the COVID environment, in a more digital environment when you aren't necessarily going to see them except for that service appointment when they were only in a service-only type of climate. So it's sort of been a continuous evolution based upon the individual needs of our partners. We're kind of ratcheting up or down how much we service them with their digital sort of approach.
How do you go about, speaking of approaching consumers, how do you counsel your dealers to approach them? I mean, a lot of people are deathly afraid these days are, you know, just annoyed by incoming phone calls, for example. They don't answer their home phone. You know, everybody complains about the spam in their email. What are the best approaches?
The big thing there is kind of what I was saying earlier. It's very the word tracks that we train to that you know we use in our stores or try to encourage our stores to use is one of service, right? It's really service first, Jack, and I think that's a big difference. If you're coming to the you know and having been in the car business myself in the retail space, it was what I always used that approach with my customer base because people believe that there's a sincerity and a genuineness that comes across when you're making outreach and communication to a customer and you're legitimately trying to help them, right? That sincerity absolutely comes through. And I'm sure in your many years in the business, you know, we all know those dealers that are mean what they say and say what they mean, and those that are a little bit more snake oily. And I think what we try to encourage is just that service first. So like I said earlier, you know, I'm reaching out to Jack because he's over his mileage. Right, it's more about that than it is about selling Jack a new car. Jack, I want you to be aware of what's going on. I want you to be aware of the possibilities that are available to you as you're out of your factory warranty, or that these new safety features exist on the new version of the vehicle that you're driving that don't exist on your current. You know, it's all about that approach. We can save you money and do some, you know, get you back under warranty if you're approaching it with a sincere service-based sort of approach instead of a sales first. Many customers, you know, tend to appreciate that.
Right. What do your services do for loyalty within a dealership? It strikes me that would be certainly something that you would strongly contribute to. I mean, customer loyalty. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously what we see statistically speaking is from stores that before they have Mastermind to after partnering with Mastermind is we typically will see statistical increases in their retention percentages, their loyalty rates, right? So they may have had higher defection, prior to Mastermind, but then after working with us, they see that, you know, increase. And how we're helping and I guess driving that is through that engagement, right? So many stores and on the old model, if you're not using a technology like Mastermind, they're very reactive. Right. Many sales staff, they'll say, OK, I sold Jack this car this month. Maybe I call Jack once a year on his birthday. Maybe I don't even bother to do that. And then what do you know, Jack, 3 months out from your lease being due, suddenly I call you again. Right. Well, Mastermind is intervening long before that. Right. So what we're doing is we're, you know, kind of offsetting or, you know, counterbalancing and acting as a dragnet. So whether you've got a hyper-engaged salesperson that calls his customers once a quarter or, you know, that guy or gal that only calls 3 months before, well, we're engaging that customer long before. We're touching them, you know, with their at a BPS, our behavior prediction score, not when they're a 95, but when they're a 60, right? We're letting Jack know he's trending over his mileage before he's over his mileage. So if we're doing that with our marketing, digital and direct mail pieces, that's now engaging you earlier than maybe the salesman left to his own devices would have. And by engaging you earlier, it's driving and I guess herding you, corralling you back to the dealer earlier than you would have organically come on your own or before the dealer would have reached out to you, you know, 90 days out from your lease. So what we're doing is, you know, communicating with those customers proactively along their ownership cycle and corralling them back to the dealer before they've necessarily even entered their buying cycle or their buying zone, or they've gone to three other dealers, shopped them, got the invoice and brought you the invoice from the competition and said, beat this or else, right? What we're doing is helping get that customer back to the dealer well earlier before that, which allows for, you know, engagement earlier, and obviously, corralling that customer and getting them into the market and back out of the market and from buying somewhere else.
Right. How do you know how much is enough and how much is too much? It strikes me a balancing act, right?
Sure. I mean, some of it is, some of it, I guess what you could say is algorithmic. And some of it is based upon customer feedback. So what the technology does is it's not necessarily, there are certain, I guess, categories of people that are going to get marketed to on a monthly basis, regardless, right? So if somebody is over their mileage, that's a real, that's a really sore thumb, right? And that's a really negative customer, interaction, at least turn in when they get that, you know,
big
bill.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So,
yeah.
So that customer that's in that category, Jack, they may get, every month they may get an offer from the dealer by way of Automotive Mastermind. However, if you don't have necessarily a store of that thumb, you know, when we're looking at the total predicted customer base of a store, you know, it might be 1,000 customers this month. Next month, that may be 1,200, or it might be 800. So every customer is A, not getting marketed to the same, you know, the same way every month. And two, so no two customers are getting the same offer, and no customer gets the same offer twice, right? So when you're mixing up, you know, the template and the frequency and cadence that you're contacting your customers, that lends itself to not necessarily irritating customers. Now, with that said, if a customer responds to one of our offers and responds back to the dealer and says, hey, you know, I appreciate you reaching out, but now's not a great time. Thank you. No, thank you. Give me a call in the fall. Right. Well, train the dealers, and the technology has the ability to turn off Jack Narod for the next 5 months. And then when October rolls around, then the algorithm picks you back up again and starts marketing to you as per your request.
Makes me that's pretty crucial, right? Because you'd be dissatisfying folks if you continued to give them communications when they'd ask you not to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's paramount that we have the ability to edit that and turn people off. Some people, Jack, potentially permanently, if that was their request, right? Or to pause them for 30, 60, 90, 180 days, whatever it was that they spoke about.
Right. How many dealers do you work with? Can you let me know? I have some sense of.
Yeah, sure. The we're up to about 1440, I think was the latest. The latest tally was about 1422 at the end of last month. And we've signed several new dealers. So our pipeline, is growing every week, but we're about 1400 or so dealers.
Are you nationwide, or you do concentrate in a particular area of the country?
Yep. We are nationwide, and we work with all manufacturers, with the exception of, I would say, boutique manufacturers, you know, your Maserati, that sort of thing, but not necessarily with working with those, but we're about to launch with Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, probably later this year. But everybody else, you know, your big three GM, you know, your big three American, plus all the imports, we're working with all of those. So we're nationwide and with virtually, you know, all, you know, everyday manufacturers.
And how do you interact with the OEMs? Or are you just essentially an approved vendor, or how does that work?
Well, both. Yeah. So we have a team of folks that are liaisons between Automotive Mastermind and IHS Market and the OEMs. So they're working very closely with the area managers, right, for those OEMs. Because if you think about what we're doing, Jack, and what I said earlier, right, what does a manufacturer want, right? At the end of the day, a manufacturer wants Jack Narod, who's driving his BMW 3 Series, to buy another BMW, right? So the OEMs and the area managers they love, you know, technology like Mastermind, because what are we helping them do? We're helping them sell and keep those people in that BMW. So, you know, it's a very natural partnership for the OEM and us as Automotive Mastermind. So we have, you know, very good relationships with, you know, those area managers to, you know, keep close tabs on where they need help, or, you know, which dealers might be struggling and could use a little bit, more TLC in certain areas. So it's a very symbiotic relationship.
What should dealers know about what you do who are not your clients, who might not have heard of you or have paid not much attention to you up till now? What should they know?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you know, what dealers can expect from Automotive Mastermind is cutting edge technology, as I said earlier, that allows you to, you know, communicate, you know, identify, communicate with, and sell you know, to your customers, those that are your customers now, and those that are not your customers, but in your AOI. And with that service and technology, you can depend upon, you know, absolutely top-notch service, you know, consultational, in-store, engaged dealer relations managers. We truly, you know, pride ourselves on that, and it's one of the hallmarks. So if you're looking to sell more cars, make more revenue, and get, you know, exceptional white glove service, then Automotive Mastermind is for you.
That's a nice sales pitch. I like that. What should consumers know about you, Ian?
You know, that Automotive Mastermind is here to help dealers, right? I mean, that ultimately what we're here to do is let the customer or let the dealer know what their customer's potential pain points are or pleasure points, right? So whether you're over your mileage and that's going to hurt you, or, you know, you could substantially lower your payment today, and that now more than ever as jobs are in these kind of precarious points, you know, now is whether it's going to help you or hurt you, the situation that you're in. That's what we're letting the dealer know, and that's what our marketing and technology are going to let you know. You know, are you in a bad spot, or could we get you into a better spot? That's ultimately what we're at the core of our technology. That's what we're letting the dealer know, and that's what our marketing is saying. So we're here to ultimately help you.
Terrific. Terrific. That seems really cool. We've been talking with Ian Grace. He is the Senior Manager of Partner Performance at Automotive Mastermind. Thanks so much for being with us, Ian.
Thanks, Jack.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Ian Grace of Automotive Mastermind, talking about some really interesting ways that dealers are using technology to communicate with you, maybe give you a leg up on doing something that would be both good for you and good for them. So that's great to hear. Our thanks to Ian for being with us. I always have to thank our indubitable, our inimitable, our wonderful co-host, Chris Teague, for being with us. It is my honor to co-host this show with him each week as he comes to us from Maine amidst children and wife there in Maine. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you, Jack, and thanks everyone for listening. I will say that if you enjoyed the show, you like hearing what we're talking about, and you want to hear more, please hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast. Also, leave us a review. It can be, you know, a written review or some stars or whatever the check boxes or hearts or whatever it is that you're looking at there. It will help us continue to grow and show up for more people so we can make them happy as well.
That is our goal here, to make folks happy. And I hope to do that with my book as well. It is called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. I think if you like this show, you'll probably like what I have to say in that book of mine that is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Apple Books and all over the place. I think Chris has one, you know, somewhere in his home as well. So look for that, and look out for the next edition of America on the Road coming up with Chris Teague as co-host. We're coming at you next week. So thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad saying please join us again next week right here on America on the Road.